Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.
You should celebrate yourself every day, but some days you should celebrate with jewelry. Whether you want to commemorate an unforgettable moment or just bring some added sparkle to your collection, Blue Nile can offer you expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com today and experience the ease and convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com.
Ever Googled your own name? Prepare for a shock because your personal info, including addresses and phone numbers, is out there, especially with the recent hacks at some big phone and healthcare companies. But here's where Aura steps in. Aura scans the dark web for your sensitive information and sends real-time alerts. Aura also actively requests that your information be removed from data broker sites, putting you back in control. Aura provides you with a complete online safety toolkit, credit and transaction monitoring, a secure password manager, a privacy-enhancing VPN, and more. Try Aura risk-free with a 14-day trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety. Rest easy with Aura. Visit aura.com/safety today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello all, it's Helen here, the voice of Azu from Rusty Quill Gaming and the host and director of Enthusiasm. Today, I'm here to tell you about The Program. The Program audio series is a science fiction anthology podcast set in a world where money, state, and God are fused into a single entity. Every episode is a standalone story featuring ordinary people inhabiting this extraordinary world. And for them, it's not the future that is terrifying, but our present. The Program is sometimes funny, sometimes poignant, but it is always smart. Find out more about the program at www.rustyquill.com or www.programaudioseries.com or search for The Program Audio Series wherever you listen to your podcasts. Have fun and enjoy the episode.
Hi everyone, Alex here. I'd just like to take a moment to thank some of our patrons.
Jamie Galliotto, Isabel, Sarah Kershaw, Jenny from the Block, Hannah Kincannon, Jortin Blims, Luna Gallimaster, May, Zaragis, Lucille Green Applesauce, Mary Lanners, Gabrielle Murphy, Art Stevens, M, Cassie Waln, Joshua No Relation to Sarah Baldwin, Milan Nigam, Mackenzie Massey, Tavin Kastner, Nathaniel Beck.
Thank you all. We really appreciate your support. If you'd like to join them, go to www.patreon.com/rustyquill and take a look at our rewards.
Hello welcome to the Rusty Quill Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Alex Newell. With me today I have...
Ben Meredith.
Bryn Monroe.
And Helen Gould.
And today we are not playing. We are going to be doing a discussion, a metacast, and we are going to be discussing sensitivity in gaming. Sort of good ideas to help everyone have a good time and to, you know, avoid problems and avoid any kind of, like, discontent, that kind of thing. We're going to cover that on both the sort of GM side and the player side, and I think we should probably actually start with something a bit broader, which is table etiquette. You know, there are some unspoken rules, and there are some actually, like, written rules for this, but I just wanted to, like, open...
Is the written rule no shouting?
It is
written on Helen's character.
But to be fair, that's recording etiquette.
Yeah. Yeah, I was given a list of rules for recording etiquette.
Yes, we have recording etiquette as well, so...
You probably won't need that.
Unless you're doing a podcast.
Shout as much as you like.
When you say that, I actually think there's a good argument to be made for recording it for yourself, not as a podcast, just like leaving it on so that you have something to like listen back to, like genuinely.
Really?
The idea of listening back to a game that I've played as just like for fun is something I'd probably do, yeah.
Fair enough.
Sounds like a lot of effort.
Alex,
like there are these things called actual play podcasts. You can listen to
them. Yeah, but they're not my
games. I was going to say you played your games, but I listen to our own podcast, so I can eat my words.
There we go.
Yeah.
So in terms of table etiquette, I don't have a pre-made list here. This is a bit more loose and fast than discussions, but I'd like to open it to the table. What kind of things would you suggest are just good rules for table etiquette?
That's difficult because we need to have a definition of what you mean. Like, do you mean just like interacting with people?
I would say interacting with people within the context of playing an RPG.
Oh, well then listening to them.
I mean,
that in big capital letters.
Yeah, that's a good start. I'd say on a bookkeeping side, you know, for a change, I thought I'd shake things up. I'd say there are a few unspoken like rules that are encouraged as well, which is stuff like if you're a new player, obviously everyone needs to sort of give you the time to learn. Mm. People need to give you the time to actually like figure stuff out. Especially a lot of RPGs are very front heavy, like
yes.
Very, very front heavy, and you've got to accept that for new players there, you've got to let them take the lead more because they need to realise that's an option, and you've got to back off a little bit and let them learn the mechanics. But I'd also argue on the flip side that once that player's been playing a long time, I'd say that it is a politeness that player should be making an effort to learn these mechanics if they're playing a longer game. If they're playing something over the course of months and so
on. No, that expression is because I'm so bad with rules. Like,
but it isn't that you've made no effort at all.
No, it's not that. It's just I can't. It's like...
Yeah, but you know, you know what's on your character sheet. Like, I think the thing is that that's another thing where a player shouldn't be expected to know every single thing about the game.
Absolutely.
That's really the GM's responsibility. Yeah. But what the player should know is everything that's on the player's character sheet.
Yeah,
and okay. You know that. Like, you've learned the paladin, you've learned Azu's build.
Yeah,
that's fine. You know as much as you need in order to play the game,
and you know how you work. You don't enter any situation immediately going, "What should I do?"
Yes. Oh, that's something to point out as well, as in, like, in terms of unsolicited advice, too.
Yeah.
Like, to not immediately jump in with what you think a character should do, unless it's, like, a team decision.
Yes, no quarterbacking.
Yeah. I'm pretty bad for that. Like, especially,
I have to confess, yeah. That's the one criticism I'd have ever leveled at you, but you deal with it quite well. Mm. You don't really do it anymore.
I have to actively remind myself not to. I don't always go, "Oh, you should do this," but I my instinct to be like, "No, that's a poor decision," is so strong.
What you're very, very good at is going, "So, obviously anyone can do what they want, but this is optimal." And I'm just going to lay it out there.
I've worked it out, guys.
If you want to play suboptimally, it's okay, but this is optimal. Yeah.
But I think it can be helpful, like especially if you are new to the rules in the system.
Exactly.
Because there's been, I remember at least once or twice where I've been like, I don't know what's available to do.
Well, and there are system limitations. A good example that's come up multiple times, actually, when I've been playing both Pathfinder and D&D, is it doesn't handle scale well, for instance. So if you present people with, "There's a big giant," the first thing that any new player immediately says is, "I want to jump on its back," at which point the number of GMs will go, "It's not how it..."
Because of course you do.
..works.
You're a hero. You jump on its back.
Absolutely. But at the same time, as a GM, you're like, "I don't..." Okay. And then it's about, yeah, kind of walking people through what that looks like. And the way that I find most useful is ask someone what they want to do and then translate that into mechanics for them is a lot of it. So you don't go, "Okay, I need you to really explain what type of grapple you want." It's, "Tell me what you want to do. Mechanically, it looks like this. Then let's walk through that."
So that's the important thing, is bring them along with you. Don't just be like, "I'm going to process it in my black box in my head," and then be like, that's what happens, because then the player doesn't really understand anything. They've just been told kind of what they've got.
In terms of the etiquette stuff, generally speaking, it's a little bit different for us because we're doing it in like a basically professional setting. I think it's the responsibility of players to look after their own character sheets and so on, because if you start putting that on the GM, it's too much because they're having to maintain your sheets, their sheets. And it's the same when it comes to sort of statuses and so on. Obviously, there's a bit of back and forth, but as a GM, there's so many things to process. If I'm ever a player and I am like familiar with that system, I personally make it my responsibility to know where my statuses are. So the GM can say, How many rounds have you got left on that effect? And I know I've got my little tally, and I'm like, I've got 3 rounds left. I don't go, I don't know, you tell me. Because they're already tracking everything else. So anything that a player can do to sort of lift that load, I think I encourage people to do
I think
all the time.
More importantly as well, just get yourself a system where that's not necessary. Really?
I agree.
I disagree.
The less rules, the better. Fewer rules. Oh,
there
dear.
Are few.
I was that far away.
What's good in this world, Bryn? Layering status effects and watching it slowly build.
Absolutely.
So actually, this leads into something, which is making sure that everyone at the table is enjoying the system that you're playing.
Yeah.
Like, don't just force a system onto somebody that they don't want to. And that goes from a GM and player side. So you have to, like, this is kind of a compromise because everyone's a different kind of player. And if you get a group of people who are all like Bryn and Alex, great. You know, they can play D&D
it's
or Pathfinder.
So crunchy when
get
it
well
happens.
Into the crunch and have a lot of fun with that. But, you know, you need to make sure that everyone's having fun and they are playing to in the way that they want to play. So, you know, that's also not necessarily saying like, oh, these systems are out of bounds. But if you, and it can go both ways, if you're playing a simpler system with somebody who likes something a little more complex, maybe the GM or the person who knows the system well can advise like, okay, well, this is how you get sort of the more crunchy aspects out. Or likewise, if somebody's playing a system and they are more used to some more rules light stuff, in order to enable them to have fun, that can be a point at which either another player or the GM can take some of the heavy lifting or advise on like, oh well, here is a class which is like low maintenance, like don't play a wizard. Like, just don't play a wizard. If you don't want to do that kind of thing, don't play a wizard. Here's a fighter. Or, like, sorcerer is, like, a much easier version of wizards. If you desperately want to be part of magic, we'll say, like, you know, advice, this is easier than, you know, that kind of thing.
I almost think, to me, that doesn't quite fall under the heading table etiquette, because
I suppose,
would really want it to happen before you ever get to the table.
You've already made that choice.
It's game etiquette, and it's a really important thing to happen, but I think you should do that before you get to the table. Like, ideally, and it doesn't always happen because people's schedules are difficult and, you know, sometimes it's not easy to find role-playing groups, but you want a role-playing group who are all pulling in the same direction, who want the same things out of the game, and you make those choices early on. But yeah, it's absolutely something to be on the watch for, is what are people wanting to do, and are we enabling everyone involved to do those things?
It's why I always encourage, and I know many people actually think poorly of it, I so strongly encourage a session zero for anything other than like a two-parter.
So those people are incorrect. Session zeros are the best thing.
But
every
time it goes so well, and I'm not even talking world building here, I'm talking, yes, character building at the same time, make it a communal event, make a thing of it, but also it's that sit down of, like, I play a social game at the moment, and I play with a bunch of people who are quite good at this, and there's nothing more refreshing than at the session zero, GM sits down and goes, what kind of game do you want to play? To each person individually and as a group. So as an individual, it's like, oh, I really want to do some intrigue, and they're like, cool, so I'm going to have to put some like urban settings or something similar within this. What's you? I'm really into some of my survival. So then he's like, okay, cool, right, if I'm going to do that, then right, I'm going to have these cities and then travel between them, that's fine. And asking each individual person what they really want from the game, and then checking that once you have an idea for the kind of game it is, you lay it out there. I don't mean reveal your story, but go, it's going to be a game of, you know, there's these city-states and you're going to be spending half your time in them and half the time travelling between them because they're kind of isolated. Great. Everyone knows what they're happening. Everyone knows where they're at and where it's going. Because I have to agree with Bryn in that it's slightly distinct from table etiquette, because table etiquette is a way of keeping everyone sort of chugging along happy. It isn't a way to preempt the problem. If you skip session zero and one of you wants to play this and one of you wants to play that, all the table etiquette in the world isn't going to suddenly magically make it work better and be fun. It's more about damage limitation in some ways.
Yeah, I think this is part of the problem sometimes with games at conventions and stuff like that, because usually you're with strangers and you've got no idea what the GM doesn't know what you might all want, and that's why I think some con games can give you a bad impression of a system.
I actually really struggle running con games for that reason, and I normally come up with weird con games as a way of sort of dancing around it as an issue, because I actually quite struggle without that sit down and run through with everyone, but in order to do it properly, it takes about half an hour. And if you're a con game,
you've eaten
a good chunk of your play, so I struggle with that.
Well, con games about choosing the right kind of game as well, because if you choose something like, for example, any of Grant's games, or you know, his one-pagers, they're very simple to run. They have such a strong theme that you can't really play them any way other than one way.
It's hard to go against the grain. It takes a lot of extra.
Yeah, no one's going to play Honey Heist and is asking for like a really deep and serious intrigue game. Everyone's a bear and a criminal. Yeah. Like that just tells you what kind of game you're going to have, which makes it a good con game. But anyway, this is not advice about con games.
Something else we should probably bring up in table etiquettes is lines, veils, and safety mechanisms with people. However, I would like to ask Helen, would you define better than me? Because you're better at defining them than I am. Let's just lay it out on the table. I am bad at explaining them.
I'm not sure that's true. So there are, as you say, safety mechanisms, which is to make sure that people are feeling safe on a deep level, that you're not accidentally triggering different kinds of traumas. Lines is essentially a boundary. So you might say, I don't want to have a game where I lose a parent, for example.
The one that actually comes up, I've found quite a lot in fantasy games, but it might just be strictly anecdotal. A good example of a line that I've seen very common is slavery being one.
Yeah.
Where, like, as a fantasy trope, you know, the escaped slave and all of that, it's a very well-established trope. And of all of the lines I've seen come up, I think that's the one I've seen come up most, where people are like, no to this, no to this, no to this.
Well, it's that and sexual violence would probably be the...
I mean, yeah. Sexual violence, it sounds weird, but just, again, I tend to play with quite nice people, so sexual violence tends to be just off the table default, but that doesn't mean that you shouldn't.
Yes, but
it helps to say.
And also, that's one of the things, don't assume defaults.
Absolutely, you know? Absolutely, yeah.
That's like one of the most important things to do. I think veils as well is... That's for games like Monster Hearts, where you might actually... There might be some hanky-panky going on.
Goodness gracious me.
And you don't want to get into all the details, or maybe you do, but if your group doesn't, then you say, we will draw a veil over this.
It's where you cut away to the fire hose on the street and then the clock strikes 12.
Fire hose?
Yeah, these are all the old cinema conventions.
A fire hose?
Have you never heard? Streetcar Named Desire is like the classic example of this, where it's like, do they have sex? Definitely. How can you tell? Well, they're hosing down the streets and then a few bells ring and there's a fireplace. Like, it's the
So I was definitely thinking in like a train goes into a tunnel and a rocket takes off, which when you take when you take it through the lens of like something quite literal, like a train going to a tunnel, a street being hosed down brings up some very very just, I mean, just the volume.
Wow.
I'm not good at veiling, okay? Wow. I'm not good at veiling.
Okay, so this is why I was defining it.
See, this is exactly what I said.
Is our sensitivity discussion sensitive enough?
So that's basically there just to say they do the business.
I've found a few mechanical ways of like coding this, which have been quite useful, like, you know, card systems and things like that, where it's like basically everyone get given, say, for instance, what's the one I know? Well, there's one that's literally like red card, yellow card, green card, where it's the same situation where red card is, rather than you just having to define at the start and then it coming up and you're not comfortable and someone going, well, you said everything else was on the card.
Yeah, so this is the other thing. Like, there are problems with all of these methods because people might not want to tell you, I don't want sexual violence in this game, because it might mean that they are having to disclose to you something very personal.
Absolutely. Yeah. So with the card one, the one that's useful is that everyone has red card, yellow card, green card. Red card is dead simple. It's just that stop immediately.
Yeah.
How you engage with it after that isn't part of that. That depends on your group, but it's literally just we're done with this topic. Yellow card
is... And it's sometimes easier to use the card than actively speak up, of course.
Well, yeah, especially vocal blocks are a thing. And then you can have yellow card, which is closer to veil, which is just like, we're drawing near stuff. And from my experience, often that's quite a useful one where it can be quite obvious what you're drawing near and then everyone stares away. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
So it's like, you know, someone's about to kidnap you and someone's like, yellow card. It's like, okay, it's quite obvious to me what the problem is. You don't assume, but at the same time, I've seen that played so many times where people steer away from what it was without even needing to make a big deal, which is quite nice. Yeah. And then green card I've seen used as a strange one, which is where other people are worried it might be a thing, especially if you have a player history, for instance. So let's say I've played with someone for ages and I know that this kind of thing might be an issue, and green card can be a way of saying, honestly, you're okay to press on, don't worry about it, because obviously you can change that to a yellow or a red when you need.
Wow.
But I haven't seen green card used as often as sort of yellow and red, but greens I've found quite useful as a like, we're good, carry on, just to kind of keep a flow going. But
yeah,
it's
but
one
I mean, the problem with that
so
then
many.
Is that it puts the responsibility on the person who might be being affected.
Absolutely.
To have to,
well, that's the thing. It's a combination of all of these things, and it very much depends on your group.
And of course, there's like the one-stop shop of like the X card, which is just you just smack the X card is in the middle of the table and you just tap it and you just change from there.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of interesting discussion going on about different ways of trying to make these work.
And I'm not aware of like one dominating
the
landscape,
none of them are perfect. I've come across the X card most often.
It's the simplest to implement.
Yeah, that's why.
I think related to this as well, because these systems are all opting in and about respecting each other, and that doesn't always happen. So this is said, obviously, with the confidence of a tall white man, but...
You're not that tall.
Okay, tall. Sorry. Slightly above average. White man. But it's about, like, calling people out at the table and, like, dealing with these issues. Because you will have some people who are like, this is stupid. You're all idiots. I'm going to do it anyway because it's my character. You know, basically people acting like... And there has to be that. You hear a lot of stories about people being like, I don't want to talk, like, I don't, it's hard to get people out of a gaming group, right? And
the same way that it's hard to get anyone out of any group.
Yeah,
like, you can't get them out of your office, you can't get them out of your friendship group, like, it's
so that's leading quite organically then onto inter-party conflict as a thing. I'm expanding that to really be inter-player and inter-party, because they're both a thing that you kind of have to deal
with.
Yeah,
but they're very separate things.
Yes, yeah, yeah. So to deal with inter-player first rather than inter-party, any tips for people about dealing with this sort of sensibly?
I mean...
Big sighs for everyone.
It's just too difficult, right? I think, I mean, one thing is if somebody is making you uncomfortable and you don't want to confront them directly, if in your group you can find an advocate who can act on your behalf, there is nothing wrong with that as long as you trust that person. Obviously, again, it's hugely contextual, and it depends if there is somebody that, you know, is also in a position to do that.
And I think it's important to point out that that person might not be the GM.
Yes, yeah, it doesn't have to be the GM. The GM doesn't have to be...
In fact, often it's better for it not to be in certain situations. Yeah. Like, you got to play it case by case.
I think also it's a kind of thing that the GM has authority when you're playing the game. They do not have authority outside of the confines of the game. Even at the table, they are a person, they are a player, and they have the same status as anyone else, and they should be held to the same standards as anyone
else.
That's
a good way of putting it, actually. Like, I've never really thought of it in these terms before, but when it comes to players and GM, what's happening is that you're all playing, you're just playing an asymmetrical game.
Yeah, the GM is a player.
Yeah.
GM is always a player.
Yeah, something that I've never understood is this idea of, like, all the players being against the GM, which, like, sometimes we, like, pretend.
It's because you all have to join together, because none of you will match my superior power.
Sometimes we pretend, but, like, we want... If you were ever, like, not enjoying it...
It's
like,
collaborative, right?
Yeah. Like,
look, honestly, if you want a competition, go play a war game.
Yeah.
Go play a war game.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, it's what they're literally designed for that.
Yeah. I think it will always depend on the context as well, because there are different kinds of conflict that happens. Sometimes it's like an accumulation of just small things that maybe you don't know they're there or not, and you have to, like, go and get a second opinion. Like, this person has said this, this, and this. Am I?
Yeah.
You know? And sometimes it's just someone's just, like, whams down something that you don't like.
And it's fine to leave.
Yeah.
I know it sounds silly. You are not... What I have seen happen before, which is awful to see, is... Okay, let's put myself in a situation where I'm uncomfortable with what's going on. I want to leave the game, but I also don't want to be responsible.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
Responsible for ruining other people's game by suddenly disappearing halfway through.
Yep.
You have to just delete that from your brain.
Absolutely.
Like, there's no workaround. There's no sort of, oh, maybe. No. No, just do it.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's an element of, and obviously this is very contextual, very difficult, but if you need to leave a game and the people you're playing with aren't okay with it, then those people are not worth knowing.
It's a bad sign.
Yeah. That is a red flag.
That's more reason to then leave the game.
Yeah.
What I would say, though, is that I think, although we're again, part of the whole sensitivity discussion is that we're kind of dancing around things in a little way because it's quite difficult to phrase certain things and so on, is separating out. There is a clear no, which is separating out character conflict and player conflict, and the two should not meet.
Mm.
But it often will. Like, that's the thing. Yes. It's about managing that relationship, because having an argument in character, because you are having to literally act it out, you have to look at the person, you are having to, you know, effectively channel those things. And I'm not saying, like, super method or anything like that, but just being in that situation and pretending to be a thing can still make, has a physical effect.
Yeah.
And it's very easy to allow an in-character argument spill over into an out-of-character argument, especially with stuff like LARPing, which is a lot more immediate. I've had situations where there's been like a big betrayal and somebody was almost run out of town because they burnt their bridges effectively with people, and that's super unhealthy.
Yeah.
And, you know, bleed needs to be dealt with, I think.
And it happens to everyone as well. I'll be open. Yeah. I think I'm fairly good at this kind of thing. It's happened to me.
I do it. You can see me get annoyed at Alex when something's not going in the character. Like, if I'm getting... Yeah, it's recorded. There's evidence of it.
It's universal to just differing degrees. There's one that I can always... So with a group that I play is, we have a weird in-joke phrase which became, we're in the trenches, meaning like we're entrenching... Meaning that we've had this argument and it's going nowhere and we're letting it bleed further and further and we're just building this bigger and bigger wall, and we just literally have this thing now where we're going, we're in the trenches, aren't we? Yeah. At which point, argument immediately stops and we just eat. We just sit and eat for a bit, and then it's like, that was silly, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
And that happens. It just does.
It's just really important to talk. And that can also be the same thing for player conflict as well, because, you know, if somebody is dealing with something that you are uncomfortable with or is repeatedly doing so, there is also, I mean, they may just be a dick, but there is also the less sinister explanation of they don't realize.
Yeah.
And again,
and 90% of the time, it's going to be more
and it's
often.
Very worth saying that it's very contextual and it's very dependent on the group and the people. You might not want to bring up the fact that somebody is making you uncomfortable. So, you know, you have to deal with it in your own way. But broadly, talking to people is a good way to diffuse a situation which can become much worse.
Yeah.
And there's another big no-no. So you're having an issue with a player, not a character. And you're like, you know what, I don't want this to come out or whatever. And then what you do is you try to put it through the character instead.
Yeah.
As a escape vent, as a hatch. But I've seen that happen.
Yeah.
I've seen it both happen consciously and unconsciously. I've seen people do it where like it's bleeding out and they don't realise. Mm. And I have seen before someone's going, I don't think you're playing your character the way you want to. I think you're playing it because of the way you're feeling. It wasn't phrased like that, to be absolutely clear. Mm. And then that player was effectively just took a moment and went, you know what, you're right, I'm going to leave this session. They left, they came back and were like, yeah, you were right to call me out on that, blah, blah, blah. But I've seen people use it as a coping strategy where it's like suddenly your character just gotten really mean. Like, it's just gotten really mean with this other character for no reason. It will make it worse, not better.
One other thing as well, like, from the other side of things, of if you are observing this kind of stuff, and or if you know that somebody might be uncomfortable, like checking in is okay, whether privately or publicly, but there's no shame. Like, you're role-playing with your friends, it's not like you're going to be judged for it. Putting your hand up and saying, can we just briefly stop the game? Are you okay? Is fine.
Yeah, that is, that's and it's good. So, so helpful because it's so difficult sometimes just to say, this is making me...
Yeah. So if you like, acknowledging somebody and inviting them to have an opinion is can sometimes be very helpful.
And this is
if you're not putting them on the spot, obviously, you know.
And it's especially difficult when you're in just... When you're British.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
I'm sorry, do terribly.
Would you mind terribly not cursing at me like this?
And it's then halfway just through the sentence, suddenly you're apologising and you just... You know what, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have mentioned.
Almost every time I have said, like... You know, can we pause something? I've just said, I'm sorry, but...
I'm so sorry that you're behaving badly.
Yes! But of course, I have this thing where, like, if I'm like, oh no, they're going to feel really bad that I'm upset. I should make them feel better about, you know.
So there is one tip I can give, actually, which is, for here, we tend to be quite candid and we'll be like, are you okay? Job done. You know, we're quite a direct group, which I like. One tip that I do in personal games, so not in this kind of context, is I don't tend to ask... Are we okay? If I'm GMing specifically, I'd be like, should we take a break? Let's take a break. As a, like, let's get away from the table. And a lot of the times that'll help because I'm not drawing attention to the thing. Mm. It's enough to just give an out to go, should we take a break? I feel some food. And then make the break happen so that then suddenly people are away from one another. Things can settle down. Things can shake out a little bit. Mm. Again, I'm not saying that eating food is the solution to all of life's problems. But it's been serving me real well.
It's why, like, gaming in pubs can be quite helpful sometimes because you can be like, I'm just going to go and get a drink.
Yeah.
Do you want a drink?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's basically really useful and I use it a lot. Yeah. One thing I would like to raise up then and then sort of pass across to you, Ben, because I know it's something you care quite a lot about, is part of this is we've been talking about separating out morality in terms like your morals as a person versus character in game and so on and what that looks like. And I think this is one that I'm kind of rather hand over to you because I know you're frankly better and more upon it than I am as well.
I brought it up, but so I think fundamentally one of the things, and this is a thing about trying to create a space in which everybody is comfortable, but also dealing with things which are different from what you normally deal with, because like sometimes it's the kind of thing where your morals are obviously always different in the vast majority of role-playing games because you are literal murderers. Like, you are killing things, killing sentient creatures
en masse
for golden glory or for righteous vengeance or stuff, which is not, you know, which is obviously abhorrent in our system. But it's also about like recognizing that. And again, this might be coming more from LARP, which is where I've sort of experienced it more. But somebody playing a bad character is not a bad person, as long as everyone out of character is comfortable with the way they're acting. Because also it should not be used as an excuse in order to act reprehensibly. There's a lot of stuff with like, oh, but I'm chaotic evil. That means I get to do these awful things. And it's like, or... Don't. Maybe. Have you thought about not doing this?
As an example, like, it's not come up. But I actually, as a player, like personally, I enjoy playing evil characters quite often. But the way I play an evil character is not very similar to the way I've seen other evil characters play. And the main reason I like it is it forces me to think a bit more because I find I get a bit bored playing like neutral good and things like that. I like the variety, but my point is that I actually play evil characters a chunk of the time, but more as a way of opening up character discussion things as a viewpoint on things. It's not running around burning orphanages and that kind of thing. And I see that happen a lot where people will play an evil character and that translates to basically going off on one, and that isn't a thing that I would ever do.
So that's one thing as well, which kind of like merges all of these issues is like the idea of group cohesion as well, because like one really good thing about table etiquette and game etiquette is also not hogging the spotlight and like sharing the spotlight around. And like sometimes a scene needs to happen which only involves your character, and that's absolutely fine. But if you're always grabbing this, and one of the main culprits is, you know, talking D&D terms, but like the rogue, oh, I go off on my own to steal the treasure. It's like, okay, great. Well, first of all, you're screwing over the group. I don't care if your character is that. You're making people feel bad. And why?
But I'm a lone wolf.
Why did you choose a character like that?
But I'm a lone wolf. Hopefully, if you had a tragic background.
And hopefully, if you had a session zero, everyone said, that's a bad idea. But also what you're doing is making sure it's like, okay, no one else gets to play for a bit. I'm doing my own thing now, which is not necessarily being an evil character. It's being a good character. It's being like, oh, the paladin, you know, lawful stupid, all this kind of stuff. Like, I do the stupid thing. Or, you know, oh, I stab the merchant for their gold. It's like, great, so you've warped the game into being about this now. And you made that choice. The group didn't make that choice. You didn't have to make that choice. It's broadly arbitrary. And so it's that kind of thing. You know, and also there's an element of the GM to be like, is everyone okay with this happening? And if the answer is no, it's like, hey, you, stop being a dick. Stop it. No, that doesn't happen.
In the early games I was running, that happened to me and I did not handle it well. I just didn't know. I didn't have the skills I've got now. And yeah, I have seen that happen.
There are a lot of players who do that.
Yeah.
Are they? Certain demographic. We all know the one.
It's one of the things where it's... Everyone says a lot of the improv thing, you know, except...
By the way, it's white men.
So a lot of people will always push, you know, the improv thing of accept and build, which is really, really good when you already completely gel as a group, have for years, and you know each other inside out. Accept and build does not mean accept everything that is presented. It means accept the things that are good and that will push the game forward, that will help players grow and help the game grow. It does not mean accept every single offer. Best example I can give of that is Bertie as a character, as a one that people we can draw attention to, is, yes, accept and build. We didn't accept every single offer that came through Bertie. There was a lot of, like, with Bertie, I would shut narrative options down. He'd be like, okay, I want to do this. And there's a couple of good examples. James is spending a chunk of time, it's not a big faux pas or anything, shopping. He wanted to go off on a massive shopping spree, no one else did. And I turned it into a small comedy bit where he was ended up buying from a dodgy merchant. But it's because I shut it down, because that could have been a huge thing. And more than once, James was giving these offers, totally fine. He was giving these offers as, is there more to this merchant than I thought? And blah, blah, blah. And consistently going, no, there is not. This is a merchant. Let's get back to the group.
And actually, on the flip side of that, you know, if you are the kind of person who's like, I stab the merchant and steal their stuff, if the rest of the group is like, yay! Yeah. That's fine!
Like, read the room!
If the rest of the group is like, oh, yeah. Maybe you are either playing the wrong kind of game, or if you want to play with these people, maybe play a different kind of person. Yeah. Or go find another group who is going to be like, hey! You know, because it's fine. It's a game. You can do whatever you want, really, as long as everyone else is having fun.
There's so many social skills that you need to actually, like...
Yeah, I feel like we've almost jumped to advanced level, because I think there's some really basic stuff that we haven't quite mentioned, which is stuff like, just make sure everyone in the game gets a chance to talk.
Yeah.
Like,
no,
if you're a new party and you don't know each other that well, or, you know, ideally, you're going into a situation with people, even if you don't know them well, you at least have some reason to sort of trust that they're going to play well together. But, you know, fundamentally, not everyone is as outgoing, and it's, you know, it isn't the responsibility of everyone at the table, whether that's a real table or a virtual table, to try and let everyone have space to play. And sometimes that means kind of encouraging a reticent player to step forward and say more. Sometimes it means just shutting up if you're the person who's happier taking the spotlight. And very much, you know, the thing, and again, I know I'm bad for this, or have been at times in my life, I hopefully not quite so bad during a lot of Rusty Quill time, is talking over other people. You know, if I get very excited, well, firstly, I stop being able to shut up. And secondly, I talk very loudly. And I just, you know, I have to sometimes make the conscious decision to hold back and just be like, no, someone else is saying something. At the very least, let them finish before you jump in with another idea.
In life, as in podcasting, cross-talking is bad.
I was about to say, that's not only good table etiquette, that's good mic etiquette.
I have to say, that's quite useful for us in that I can just be like, stop. Well, you've ruined the recording.
Stop. Drink it all again.
There's no wiggle room. It's quite useful.
But that's one thing as well. Like you can also deal with that kind of thing in character, because one of the things is like a lot of at least D&D dungeon crawly kind of games are planning as well.
Yeah.
And if everyone's planning and some person isn't saying anything, it's absolutely fine to in character turn around and go, "Hey, you. What do you think? And that person could maybe go, "I'm fine." And that's also fine, because don't go the other way and force them to say something. Because the person might just, you know, not want to do this, not have any ideas, not having a good day, and they just want to sit there in a room where their friends are talking. Like, that's perfect.
Yeah, it's the standard rules, isn't it? Which is offer the person a cup of tea. You do not force the person to drink a cup of tea, and the person may want a cup of tea, they may not.
Yes.
You just present the cup of tea.
Roleplay is a hot drink.
Roleplay.
Offer it, do not pour it down people's throats.
And I will take a break there, and when we come back, I will do my best not to translate everything into food. I'm clearly hungry. Yeah. I'm clearly hungry. Everything is
Why don't you
food.
Have a snack during this break?
Yeah.
Good idea. And welcome back. So I think we should probably move on a little bit. I think we've covered the conflict stuff quite well into a bit that I think a lot of people are getting better at, I think. The more I see it, the more I'm seeing improvements, but is character creation, and that a lot of people split character creation into two parts, which is your sort of fluff and crunch, which is, you know, your
numbers.
your numbers and also your story. But there's three sections to
Lone Wolf Orphan.
Orphan.
So
this is really funny to me, because we've just recorded an episode in which that is literally my character. I'm literally a wolf.
But that's a one shot. Like, that is a short thing. So.
Also, you're an actual wolf, so
that's true. You are a lone
You're a lone wolf. Which we're talking about lone wolves, not lone wolf wolves.
Ah.
No, but then we also put in a pre-established friendship between our two characters.
That so, you is know. True.
Yep.
And it's also worth saying, like, all of these rules are not hard and fast. So campaign games are different from one shots, are different from short-term games, are different with other groups.
Yeah, and it does depend on how you play it.
Yeah, and the situation.
Yeah, because my character's not going to go off and fight whatever the thing is by himself.
So spoilers.
So that's the thing is, like, when you're building this character, you've got your fluff, you've got your crunch, and then you've got being decent. I don't really have a term for it yet. I haven't managed to codify being
ethical.
I don't know, like umbrella.
Being sensitive. This is sensitivity podcast.
That's the first thing.
Metacast.
And that's the thing is, I have seen this happen a lot, which is where someone makes a character story wise. Oh, that's a great story. Mechanics wise, yeah, that'll blend really, really well with the group. And then they're pitching it, and people who are really good at dealing with this, actually, Johnny and Sasha running convention games, are exceptional at shutting this down, where they'll have, like, oh, we're running a Deadlands campaign, and it'll have an extra rule that they've put in, which is if they like have pre-genned characters, and it's like, if you're going to play this character, don't do a Mexican accent if you can't do a good Mexican accent, or if everyone aren't comfortable with it. And it's that third element, and Johnny and Sasha specifically are exceptional at really highlighting it. I've never really met a group who are able to do it as well as they are, but it's, you can have something that works and on paper and it works in all the way, and then the second that it's in the room, it's like, oh, that's not gonna work. And again, at the risk of like calling out, it definitely was a thing in the early days with Hamid. I think we've addressed it, and I think we've sort of talked about it before.
I felt it was a risk to play a character who was not white, who was from a country that I do not have a great deal of experience with. And, you know, I knew that risk going in, but I wanted, of the four characters we were presenting right at the beginning from episode one, I wanted one of them to be not white.
And all the players were white.
Yeah. And the kind of decision making that went into that was to, you know, it's very important that that character doesn't become a stereotype of a certain nationality, because without much direct experience, you know, that is a big risk. And so I gave Hamid a background, which is the British schooling system, which is something, even if it's not my direct experience, it's incredibly similar. And, you know, I know a lot more people who've been through it in a much more direct way. And it means that, I'm not doing an accent that potentially could be insulting to people, hopefully, you know, and I'm giving them a background, which is easier for me to relate to and identify with and play through without sort of, you know, reducing it to stereotypes, without reducing it to, you know, to a simplistic level.
A caricature,
that's the word I'm searching for, yes.
But the thing is as well is that you did your due diligence, and that's what it comes down to.
Yeah.
Is it's not saying that every single thing in the world is off the table, and so many people will put that as a straw man argument of, if I can't have this, then no one can have anything because everything's banned. It's like, oh,
and
be
it's
quiet.
One of the
that's not
beautiful
what that is.
Things about role play is it gives you a chance to explore what it would be like to live as someone who is not the same as you, potentially. And, you know, and Ben also took a decision right in episode zero. He played a character with a disability.
Oh, yes.
And I'm not, and I believe that in real life, Ben does not have a disability.
I do not have a physical disability.
So, you know, that is also in terms of taking on a, you know, we are able-bodied white men, that, you know, we're taking on characteristics we do not have in the real world and therefore potentially representing experiences that we haven't actually lived
through. Taking on a role.
Yeah, but yeah. That is, you know, and that's important, and, you know, it's good to have representation in these ways, but we have to be sensitive about it because we are not people who live through that in an everyday way as well.
Yeah, and I think as well, like, for people in our position, and I really don't want to sound self-congratulatory because we're just doing the bare minimum that we can, is having an objective. Because the reason that I chose for Zolf to have one leg is because that sort of thing in this sort of system is just brushed over. It's like, oh, yeah, I lost an arm. But hey, it's fine. There's no problems with that. It doesn't impact his life or their life in any way. And it's like, no, I wanted to do it that in such a way where it's not that, you know, both not being useless, because that's not true, but also it actually having an impact, because that is also not true. People who have physical disabilities have to live with that, and, you know,
it's not just picking a hair colour, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Yes, that's it. It's not an arbitrary decision. These kind of decisions cannot be an arbitrary decision. You have to have an objective, and you have to, yeah, as Prince saying, make sure that other people who are consuming the content, whether it is a podcast or the other people at the table, are comfortable and also being willing to listen if somebody's like, actually, you might have made a mistake. Because as long as you're trying and you make a mistake and somebody tells you made a mistake and you change or drop it, if it's a really bad idea, that's okay.
Yeah. So, you know. No one is ever going to be perfect. Like, I've had... Oh, this has already gone out, so it's fine. So, like, for the Bermuda special...
Oh, yeah.
I was actually a bit worried afterwards because I was like, oh, no, my character was a bisexual man and I made him really promiscuous. And I worried about that.
Sure.
No one else seemed to pick up on it, so I'm hoping it wasn't...
I think the reason it wasn't a huge thing, this is going to sound strange, is it wasn't that you played a promiscuous character. You played a promiscuous game. Everyone, every character, every player was in that mode.
It was quite
so
a horny
it didn't,
game.
It wasn't like, it wasn't that, like, we're playing this thing and then Helen's just playing this really horny character. You were all just thirsty characters.
I guess that's part of, like, being part of the room.
Yeah. Yes, I think that must be it. And it was just a funny experience for me because, like, I'm bisexual myself. And I was like, am I promoting my own stereotype?
Yeah.
Because, you know, I do that in real life too.
But then that's the thing, is like, in your play, in your character creation, just take all three steps. Step one, will it work with the story? Step two, can you make it work functionally? Will it play well with the other characters mechanically and so on? Step three, is it okay? Like, just, yeah. Is it okay to play this? Is a last step that you have to do?
And time to think about that, to plan for it, to do the research is really valuable. Like, you know, we talked about Hamid and how, you know, I took a long time over those decisions and I did some research and I tried to make choices that were sensitive and sensible. And, you know, today we're playing a one-shot and the setting was that, you know, Ben discussed the idea of playing a character from Mongolia because that is very close to where the adventure is happening, and that, you know, it was a correct narrative choice, but he felt that without the prep time, without the thought behind it, that it was a choice of, you know, a white man playing someone from that area.
He would not necessarily
be able to do it in a sensitive way.
Yep.
And it's like, you know, I think, in, you know, given the right lead time and stuff, Ben would be able to do that in a sensitive way, but he felt that today... That
with
he didn't
his
think
15
he would.
Minutes of prep, well, yeah. probably not the way to engage in
right
the entire
now, right now, all I know about Mongolia is the capital is Ulaanbaatar, and they produce an awful lot of medal-winning Olympic archers. Those are the two things that I know about Mongolia.
Well, if that doesn't sound like a complete analysis
I have not done my due diligence.
Exactly.
It is interesting because I do work as a sensitivity reader, and one of the projects I'm working on at the minute is for one of the people I'm working for, is we're making incomplete guides. So the other day I wrote an incomplete guide to writing a black character. Ooh. And I sat down and I was like, so they said, okay, there should be, like, narrow it down to like 10 points, bullet points, and put links in. And I sat down and I was like, how am I going to explain racism in, like... And I have a section on hair that takes up almost an entire page because, as I was doing the research, I was thinking, I'm just Googling things, but it's knowing what to Google and what terms it is and to look at it. So, yeah, it's something that you do need to research.
And
so,
if you can talk to somebody with lived experience of it, or at least get secondhand accounts of people who have lived experience of it.
Absolutely.
But this doesn't just apply to players, although I realise we've just said that the GM is a player as well. It's like, on the world-building side, this is... the same thing. Mm. There are three things you have to do building a world. Does it make sense story? Does it function mechanically? Is it okay? That's my new title for it. You've got Fluff Crunch and Is It Okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
And you've got to do that with your world building. You have to do it with your players. You have to literally open the dialogue. This isn't a thing where you can go, you know what? I think this is good. It's not just a case of put some thought in and then go. It's put some thought in and then lay it out and go, hey, everyone, this is what I'm kind of thinking. And I guarantee you there will be things that you have missed.
Well, and that's happened in this podcast.
Absolutely.
Alex has introduced stuff. And as
I've dropped clangers completely without realising.
Yeah, and we've just gone, hang on a minute, this may not come across as you think it does.
Yeah.
And then Alex is like, oh, fine, change it.
And I've done it more than once. I have just, I'm not going to go into huge amounts of detail because, frankly, I'd rather not. But it's, yeah, I've dropped clangers and just gone, wow, that's not what that was meant to be at all. Let's abandon that right now.
And again, Alex had the right kind of response, which is not to get defensive, to be like, oh, yeah, whoops. I'm going to, yeah, okay, fair enough. I'm going to change that.
I'm out. I'm blackcarding myself.
Yeah.
But again,
X-carding,
sorry, yeah. But you have the issue here of we can present like that's never happening
because
it's a recorded medium.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that I will edit out. Basically, it interferes with the flow as an entertainment piece.
Yeah.
But importantly, we've had that conversation in real life.
Absolutely. And not in a case of like 2 minutes either. Like sometimes it has been like a, you know what, why don't we get some food and then talk about the thing or whatever. But I have more than once I've dropped things and abandoned stuff. And I've even retconned a couple of times where it's been like, this is leading in completely the wrong direction and bailed on like.
And you also check in with us first. And you know, if you've got concerns, you do say, and again, this always gets edited out because it's not the entertaining bit, but you know, you say like, there's a thing coming up that I don't feel super confident with.
Oh yeah.
If you feel like I am crossing a line, then please let me know. You know, and you check that we feel comfortable with stuff that's happening, and you check in, you know, before and make us aware that we should feel able to speak up. Yeah. So you've made it, you know, the barrier to addressing it as low as possible.
Because I've actually got a really good example of that now I think about it, which was in Damascus, the near riot situation. That's one where I openly stated
the almost race riots.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And that was something where coming into that, I remember explicitly stating, I'm going to be trying to do this right, but I please monitor this. And that was one of the ones that has come closest to not like to being bailed on, but still made it through. Because I think it came out okay. Mostly if I monitored you to player actions. Because if
as soon as I realised what was going on, I was like, nope!
Yeah.
No.
But that's exactly what that needed. But similarly, like as a player, it would have been perfectly valid for you to be like, we don't have time for this. We have a world-threatening thing. Mm. We just have to accept that this is going to happen and blah, 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 which would have led me into, I don't want, oh, no. So, yeah.
And also, it's okay as a player to say, actually, can we not?
Yeah. Like, absolutely.
That's also a perfectly valid answer.
And that's a good example of one where I think I was treading the line very close.
I mean, it's not just scenes. It's world-building as well. It's like, and I think it happens more in fantasy settings than role-playing specifically, but the number of fantasy settings you read where women are an oppressed class.
Yeah.
And just people naturally,
And
just,
people haven't...
Because, of course,
that's the default, right?
Interrogated it. Like, sure, if you've thought long and hard and you want a setting where there is sexism because you want to say something about sexism...
And you're engaging with it and then
you know,
everyone's on
board. We're not saying anything is off-limits. We're just saying think about it and be sensitive. And, you know, but... People say, oh, it's historically accurate. And no. I mean,
it's fantasy.
We're looking at you, The Witcher.
Already you're in a fantasy setting, so you shouldn't worry about being historically accurate. But also, it is not historically accurate. Women have been systematically written out of history.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, there were times when women have not been allowed to participate in every aspect of life. Mm. But also, even when they have, it's been...
Yeah.
Information about it has later been squashed. And to say anything, to justify anything of that kind on the basis of historical accuracy is awful. And, you know, a similar one came up earlier in this episode is slavery. It's like, if you're going to do slavery in your setting, just, okay, well, maybe you have a story to tell and maybe it is a relevant and interesting part, but think really hard about it and do your research and, you know, get a sensitivity reader and talk to people and, you know, it's... Don't do anything thoughtlessly.
That's so much
an important part of it.
Absolutely agree.
One of the ones that will come up a lot, and it comes up, I think, more as a GM, is just own your mistakes.
Yeah.
No one expects you to be perfect. And if someone's pointing this stuff out to you, 9 times out of 10, they're not pointing it out because you're being a dick. It's how you respond that is going to determine whether you are behaving appropriately or not.
A lot of the time, if someone's pointing it out to you, it's because they trust you to fix it.
Yeah.
If they don't even have that level of trust,
absolutely,
they'll just disengage.
So someone's saying, you know, look, there's an issue with this. It's unfortunate, and it can happen even when you're doing your due diligence and so on, but your quality as a person is how you deal with that being presented.
Mm-hmm.
It's you going, you know what, you're right, I totally bailed on that. And I've seen it happen before where someone's gone, you're right, and it was on like a long-term play, it wasn't a con or anything, and they were like, you're right, I'd like to end the session there, go away and rework what we're adventuring, because you're right. And I've seen that happen, where they go away for 2 weeks, they come back and go, cool, I've reworked this, here's a couple of retcons that are going to change this to fix it. Because, you know, I'm not going to say who it is, I don't like doing that, but, you know, it's someone I greatly respect, and they just went...
That's really cool. I have not seen that,
yeah,
but I would be pleased if I had.
I've not seen it happen much, but it was great. Yeah. It was just watching someone go, I'm culpable for this. It wasn't intentional, obviously, but I've got to fix this. So, again, shocker, we all just broke for food again. But that's not the takeaway. The takeaway is
the Chinese you get later.
The Chinese. Damn it. Yes, I am getting a takeaway later. Damn it.
But, yeah, the thing is, it's really risky to bring up things like this, like, personally. Like, to the person who is bringing it up, they have to take the risk that you're going to turn around and, like, have a go at them or reject their criticism or, you know, anything unpleasant like that. So it's actually a measure of how much they trust and feel safe with you. So it's kind of a compliment to be criticised is what I'm saying.
Pretty much. And again, it's just, yeah, if you focus a bit more on how you are responding to things, it will pay dividends.
Well, I mean, I'd like to add to that point is that, you know, if any of the people listening to this feel like Rusty Quill Gaming, the show, deserves some criticism.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Please share it.
Good point.
You know, like this is a good opportunity to say, look, if you don't feel we've presented things sensitively, you know, we'll try and be responsive to feedback, and that doesn't mean we're going to necessarily change things massively based on what people say, but we'll listen, we'll think, and that's part of our job as well as content creators, is to respond very specifically in these sort of areas. If you feel we've not been sensitive to an issue of the type we've been discussing in this episode.
It's something I pay a decent amount of attention to. It sounds peculiar. There's a bit of a running joke on our Discord, our community server, which is that I can't backread. and it's because it's true. I find it really difficult to parse. But what I will do is I will dip in frequently and just check on the nature of discussion for that exact reason. Because if everyone's raising multiple concerns and I'm seeing this concern more than once, I'm like, okay, cool. Like, this is clearly something that needs to be either addressed or tweaked or something like that. Yeah, like, that door's open. Yeah. Let us know. There's a reason that we have so many ways of getting in contact, and we have community mods and all
follow
this kind
of
thing.
Follow us on...
This is not like appropriate.
Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at The Rusty Quill.
Yes, yes, yes.
Or join our Discord.
It's all very well. Similarly, you could just, you know, send a direct message if you don't want it to be a huge thing.
Yes, also, if it's not in a public forum, message Anil.
Yeah. It's what he's here for, and he's really good at it.
Yes, his job so is good at it, he's lovely.
I mean, he's very busy. Feel free to message other people too. Potentially, but one at a time.
Message whoever you're comfortable messaging.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I think our fan, like, there's a reason that we're so, like, I feel like, although I have no other experience of this, that we're more active with our fans and more interactive than others are. So I would hope that people do feel comfortable.
Yeah, I'd say that we're more than most, but that's also because, you know, there's tens of thousands of podcasts being released, like, daily. So, you know, there's a lot of noise in the space. But, yeah, okay. I think it's a fair point.
Yeah.
We certainly put a lot into the infrastructure to make that happen. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, we're not just, like, getting contact with... trying to build spaces for people.
It's such a kind of slightly diverging from sort of being an ethical role player, but being an ethical creator as well, because, you know, we are people who listen to us have spent an awful lot of time listening to our voice. And that's a very, it's a way and something that a lot of creators, if you're anywhere on the internet, are very well aware that lot of creators don't do that, and that you can develop a parasocial relationship, which is something that can be abused quite easily. And we as creators always have to be very, very, very careful and know, like, that this could exist. There's an, or, you know, the.
What can you define a parasocial relationship? Because it suddenly cropped up like 6 months ago.
Sorry,
and I don't
yes.
actually know what. I can figure it out from context.
Yeah, so a parasocial relationship is where two people, one of whom consumes the content of the other person. I think it particularly developed around vloggers and stuff.
Yes.
But basically, you know, you have a vlogger who invites somebody into their life, and if the person who consumes their content is invited in their life, it invests them. It makes them feel like an actual friend, despite the fact they've never met.
It's a one-sided intimacy.
And it's a one-sided relationship, because obviously this person recording the content just put it out and maybe don't even talk to their fans or anything. But those fans could have spent 80 hours listening to, you know, what is most likely a fake version of this person's life that they're putting out for, you know, not saying all vlogs are like that, but probably the vast majority of them are about, you know, look how good my life is.
We're all wearing masks all the time.
Exactly,
you know?
Exactly. Yeah. And that is a huge amount of power that the person creating the content can exercise over the person consuming the content, especially if that person is in a vulnerable space, which, you know, happens an awful lot. And, you know, a lot of people are like that. So just being conscious, like, as creators of content, we have a duty to be responsible with what we make and how we interact with the people who consume what we make.
Yeah.
And hopefully we're doing that. But if we're not, let us know.
Yeah.
Or,
much.
Again, tell somebody that you're comfortable telling. You know, you do not have to try and tell the person who you have the issue with.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
You know what? I think that's probably a good one to round out on. Mm. I think we covered a lot. Obviously, there's more to cover. I have some notes here that we just won't cover today because we've covered a lot. But yeah, I think it's a nice one to round out on because
it's something that I don't hear many content creators dealing with as well.
Yeah,
and it's a big problem. It is a big problem. You hear about so many things of creators taking advantage of their fans, in various
or pitting
ways.
different parts of their fandoms against
each
other.
Yeah.
Like, and maybe they don't even realize they're doing it. But then it's like,
let's make Rusty Cool Gaming fans and Magnus fans fight each other.
No.
Oh my god, bro.
The Magnus fans will win.
I'm not engaging.
So speaking of being responsible content creators. Bye!
Bye! Look, we're a comedy podcast. It's been a very serious episode.
Rusty Quill Gaming is a podcast distributed by Rusty Quill and licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Sharealike 4.0 international license. Today's episode was directed by Alexander J. Newell and produced by April Sumner. To subscribe, buy merchandise, or join our Patreon, visit rustyquill.com. Rate and review us online, tweet us at @TheRustyQuill, visit us on Facebook, or email us via mail@rustyquill.com. Join our community on the Discord via the website or on Reddit at r/RustyQuill. Thanks for listening.
No, we know you're not.
I can put that straight on.
Yes, Alex, because Hannah isn't here to feed you.
Yeah, she's just...
I can have a Chinese takeaway tonight. It's going to be ace.
Ooh,
oh, it's
yeah.
been a long time.
Is it going to be good?
Let me...
I rolled with advantage, so it must be good.
Nice. Right, well, that's because you know the takeaway place.
I absolutely do.
Ooh.
You're not going to feel great in the morning.
Yeah. Turn at 8.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, everyone. It's Helen here, the voice of Azu, Enola, and Laverne. Today, I'm here to tell you about Woe Begone, a podcast launched on the RQ Network. Woe Begone is a weekly horror sci-fi audio drama series about the nature of power and the implications of linear time. Woe Begone follows Mike Walters, who discovers a mysterious and violent online game. What begins as an exploration of an alternate reality game with real-life consequences quickly becomes a search for the technology that makes the game possible. Each episode has a unique soundtrack composed by creator and writer Dylan Griggs. Listen to Woe Begone, spelled Woe period Begone, wherever you listen to podcasts. Or check out woebegonepod.com for episodes and transcripts. Have fun and see you later.